Happy Friday. This is Heidi Hatch with KUTV 2 News for Take 2. I am here with Greg Hughes and Mara Carabello. This was a good week for me. I don't know why, but it went by so fast. The last few weeks, I've been like, oh my gosh, longest weeks of my life. So hopefully you guys had quick weeks too. Greg, I've heard though maybe you didn't have as nice a weekend as I did last weekend.
I had a very, very traumatic experience.
Do you want to tell us or no?
I will try to say it tactfully because it's his family radio, I would think. There is a real health crisis that is as bad as anything I've ever felt.
And it's eczema?
Kidney stones. I've heard about kidney stones, but nobody ever gave the depth of pain and agony and misery that those monsters are. And if we're going to have an Operation Warp Speed on anything, we should be eradicating kidney stones from the face of the earth because this thing is straight up evil.
How many did you have?
Two.
So twins, good.
And
twin stones.
Let me tell you something. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know what to do because I was just, my back was hurting. I was sweating like crazy. And then the pain after a few days starts to localize or become more specific. And then I could Google, why does this feel like it's
why
been
does my
removed
swimsuit
from my
area
body?
Hurt?
Why do I feel like I've been, you know, had something, there it was, kidney stones. And then it was the next morning when I asked Krista if she heard me in the bathroom because it was a painful moment. She said she heard a yelp is what she said.
Wow. A yelp.
You're stronger for it.
I'm glad you made it
a
through there.
A plaintive wail. It is the worst thing, and no one has ever adequately described it in its true
people
sense.
People say it feels it like childbirth. I don't know. I've had natural childbirth. I haven't had kidney stones, so I can't compare.
I will never go there on the childbirth side. I don't know what that would be like, but I will tell you this.
It's like
this
passing a kidney stone.
This is an unnatural, demonic possession of private parts, and it's just the worst thing that's ever happened.
Well, I'm glad that your man bits are better, and we're all back here
together.
Looking
great.
I'm still a little fatigued. I don't know if I look tired, but you're totally
clutching a rock star, so I feel like that's good.
But it's punch. There's no carbonation in this because they said
do you think
the carbonation
maybe your
might
beverages
have caused it.
Cause this? I don't
know.
Wow,
I'm 240 milligrams of caffeine.
At this point, it's pointless how much. I just need something that isn't carbonated for fear that that would come back.
Well, I'm glad you guys are both here, and I know that we've got to get you out the door because you're heading back to the Hill to talk important issues. But before we get to the legislative session, a couple things I wanted to talk about on a national level. The RNC is meeting for their winter meeting in Utah, in Salt Lake City this week, partially to get an idea of whether or not the Republican National Committee should meet here for the next presidential election, which I think would be exciting. I don't know where our chances are in that. Greg, have you been at that meeting at all, or ruffians like you not allowed?
They don't let me in there. They'd like it to be an orderly meeting, and they don't think I would.
Yeah. They're saving you for the main stage.
But they are making headlines because today they officially voted to censure two members. And the interesting thing is I didn't realize that was happening or the vote was because I saw Senator Mitt Romney tweeting about it this morning. And I was like, wait, what's happening? But he says, let me find his tweet here. He wasn't happy about it. So he said, shame falls on a party that would censure persons of conscience who seek truth in the face of vitriol. Honor attaches to Liz Cheney and Adam Kissinger for seeking truth, even when doing so comes at great personal cost. He was actually up for a censure vote just in the Utah meetings, I think back in May last year. It came up for a vote. It was shy. He was booed instead. Is this a big deal, though, on a national stage? Because it sounds to me, Mara, like they could pull funding
local
at this point.
I mean, you know, first, hear, Mitt Romney. Second, yes, Republicans, keep eating your own. Spend all your time yelling at each other. Good job. Because, you know, traditionally, smart parties would look at the midterm and look at the weakness that the Democrats have as a perceived weakness, and they'd go at them. But, you know,
it's
going at each other.
So
this is much ado.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is not where they should focus. But what it clearly shows is what we also heard this week, that Trump has more in his coffers than the RNC does. So, yeah, the party was never going to support these two. The party apparatus had long ago abandoned these two, although they're both raising money well, particularly Liz Cheney. But I will just say it just shows, I think, that Trump has the power right now in the party.
Which is interesting because I think they had a choice of which way they wanted to go. And Ronna McDaniel, if people don't know somehow, is the niece of Senator Mitt Romney. Yep. And I think people have been watching to see, you know, is she going to back the Senator Romneys of the world or the Liz Cheneys that, you know, sometimes go against the party on the votes, or will they go the opposite direction? And they went hard.
Well, and they don't go against the party. Let's be clear. They go against Trump. And those are slightly different things.
True.
But all of these elected officials vote with conservative values like 95% of the time. So it's not a question of their conservative ideology. It's a question of their politic on Trump.
It's pretty simple. The process that they're going through in this January 6th commission is not one that any one of us, anyone would want to be put through, because it is one-sided. It's not looking at hard questions about what happened on January 6th more broadly. It's all focused on Trump by anti-Trump lawmakers.
Isn't it better to have some of your team in the meetings, though, so you know what's going on?
It would, but, you know, when Jim Jordan gets booted off and others that would ask probably harder and more broad questions about other issues and other curiosities or other inconsistencies about that day, I'll just say this. If Mitt Romney was the subject of this inquiry and its scope of work was as narrow as it's been towards President Trump, but it was towards Mitt Romney, he would find nothing honorable about that commission. He would find nothing good to say about it. And those that wanted to play along with that commission and its narrow and targeted focus, he would not consider it fair. And so I'm just going to say that I think it's well within the right of the RNC to notice that, to censure those that want to play that game. But you cannot call what they're doing there a real effort to get to the bottom of the facts or the truth, because there are questions they don't want to answer. They're only interested in the questions and the narratives that would make Donald Trump look like a werewolf or a monster. I don't know which.
All right. Well, your Sunday invitation to the Romney household, I think, has been revoked.
It's been revoked.
Yes.
Dang it.
I know. Before we get into the legislative session, Mara came in ready to talk football, and I'm like, football, Mara, what is happening? But the Miami Dolphins former coach Brian Flores has been making headlines, and the thing that shocked me the most yesterday, I guess there were several things that shocked me, that he's going up against a pretty big giant, and I was flabbergasted when I heard that he was paid $100,000 or offered $100,000 a game to throw the game so they could lose and then have higher picks in the trade. I'm like, what? This happens?
Yeah, that's for soccer. That's what I say. That's for soccer. So what's interesting about this, why I wanted to bring it up, is Brian Flores is 40 years old. He's had a great deal of success. He's a talented young coach. And I just really respect that he is throwing down about a perceived inequity that he sees. I also think it's nice that he hasn't been trotting it out. Like, he's going in with his people. And I'm diming out my own team right now. The Broncos are one of the people that are listed on this. Apparently, John Elway shows up a day late, dollar short, disheveled hair, perhaps a night of partying. Okay. And when you look at Greg should decide, but I don't think this is right. I don't think this is a political issue. I do think it's interesting that for generations, most football players have been black or brown people. And the fact that there's only one coach, it begs to say, what's the system? Now, what happened is several years ago, they put into place a procedure that required organizations to interview at least one diverse coach, one black or brown
coach.
Although
no one wants to be the token diverse coach that shows up.
And this is what he's arguing. He got famously a text message from Belichick saying, hey, congrats. And the guy sent it to the wrong person. And so they had awarded a job that he was interviewing for the next day. They had already told the coach, the white coach who got the job, that he had it. And so clearly it was in name only, and I think it brought to his attention how orchestrated the merit was here. And one of the things I want to point out is this is a merit-based, this is a coach who turned around an organization, had two winning seasons. So we're talking just straight up merit in a closed system, and I just really appreciate, at a time where he could easily pull down 6-7 figures for the next 20 years, ask no questions, and have an exceptional life, and he is willing to stand up, and I like that he's not yelling and screaming. And I like that he's smart and confident, and I just want to appreciate what he's doing.
He's well-spoken. Yeah, so it is crazy.
The background is, it's because I'm a Steeler fan, I grew up in Pittsburgh, the Rooney Rule, the Art Rooney. It was Dan Rooney, actually, that helped push a rule within the NFL. Dan Rooney's now deceased, but that would require every NFL franchise when interviewing for a new head coach to interview a coach of color in that process. Now, when you create automatic standards like that, where you have a box you have to check, the fear is it's perfunctory, that it's not actually a genuine interview, that you may just interview those people because that's now the new rule. You have to, and so you're going to go do it. You'd hope that's not the case, but it could be received that way. You just don't know how NFL teams and their ownership are going to handle that. Well, then it becomes official that it was nothing more than a box to check when they hire a coach. And then Bill Belichick from the New England Patriots, who's always lurking somewhere in some shady NFL
with the ripped
sweatshirt, whether it's Spygate or it's Inflategate or it's this now with his that shirt he wears, that cutoff hoodie he wears,
Greg,
everywhere.
This we share.
Yes, he's always lurking somewhere. This Belichick, he sends Coach Flores, hey, congratulations, you got the job. And then that's the city. He goes, are you sure you're sending that to the right person? I haven't interviewed yet. Oh, I messed up. I'm sorry. That text was meant for someone else, which told this coach that decision had already been made. So he goes there for an interview when it's just pageantry and it's not real. And he was experiencing those things.
I would show up like an explosive firecracker right. in that office.
Yes. I mean, yeah. So the fear of the Rooney Rule is now, I think, been confirmed by at least some that are not taking it seriously and really exploring all candidates for the head coach position. And I agree with Mara. I think for him to stand up and to show, and he's got the text. I mean, there's a whole lot you can't refute about his experience, about whether the pick was already made, the choice for new head coach, and then he comes in after the fact so they can say they interviewed a black coach. It's really a sad deal, and I think he's bringing attention to it. And he's doing it in a way, as Mara pointed out, where he's not trying to save or rattle, and he's not trying to draw himself more attention. And I do think there's going to be a professional cost and a detrimental cost to him for doing this.
So you don't
think
he'll coach again?
I would hope he would, but I could see why there are those that would.
Or he'll have to take a longer path. He may have to go to the college level. He may be an assistant. I mean, I think good talent, hopefully. And I think there's a group of people who will admire and look at him.
Yeah.
But I think it is a harder path to now pick him up as a head coach in the NFL right away.
He's also pointing out that the owner of the Miami Dolphins wanted to offer him money to lose games, and then he also wanted to meet with a what would ultimately be a free agent quarterback, but there's rules when you're not allowed to speak to those players, and this owner wanted to break those rules and meet with this quarterback with Coach Flores, and he refused to do it because it would break the rules, and he's disclosing that now, that this owner wanted to do that. And so if you're an owner and you think, wow, this guy will throw the ownership under the bus if they do something wrong, and he knows about it, that could have a chilling effect on his prospects. But I honestly, and I'm not being Pollyanna, I hope integrity and the way this man has approached this issue, but his job as well, because he never had a losing season with the Dolphins. Both of those two seasons he coached, they were winning seasons, and that's a team that did not have winning seasons.
Yeah.
I hope that carries the day at some point. I think it's going to take some time, but I hope it does carry the day.
I'd like to see more Coach Flores like people out there, whether it's in politics or private business or in big pharma, who see things that are going on like this, and we know they're going on behind the scenes of all kinds of, to come out, say what's happening, let's fix the problem and move on, because I find it quite honorable when they are willing to come out and do that. So I'd love to see that. Speaking of not honorable, sometimes China. to make that settle enough, it is the 20th anniversary of Utah's 2002 Winter Olympics, which is a big celebration. And the Olympics are getting underway officially tonight. Yesterday, the competition started. Are you, either of you, big Olympics watchers? Greg, I'll let you go first. What's your sport of choice?
It's hit and miss. I mean, I do. I like the hockey, and I do every 4 years. I used to get into the figure skating thing too. I used to think those, you know, the way they flipped around there and everything was pretty cool.
That explains the spandex.
Yeah. So, you know, what do we mean explain the spandex? There's no spandex going on in here. So
just your baby elastic waist pants. Yeah.
So
binge you went on for pandemic season.
I used to watch that stuff, but I really don't like this Olympics and the circumstances surrounding what we're going through right now with the Olympics happening. And I, you know, if you're not going to send your delegation of leaders, and you're not going to send. If you're gonna, if it's a soft boycott, it just taints it. So I'm not gonna be a big. Well, I'm not gonna watch any of it.
Well, the whole thing stinks because we have these athletes that literally train mm-hmm. their whole lives, and sometimes you have one window to go do it. So you want them to be able to go compete, but it's frustrating because we're sending them to a country where you know if you say something that isn't allowed, you could be held accountable under China's law. Senator Mitt Romney, who obviously was very involved in the Olympics here, said, you know, we shouldn't, the IOC should not have ever given them the Olympics. How do we stop doing stupid stuff like this? Because, yeah, we're shining a light on a country that has so many millions of amazing people, but their government probably doesn't deserve an attaboy right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard because it's not only just the genocide with the Uyghurs, it's these towns that are being shut down for COVID. I mean, what they're doing to their community to host the Olympics is just egregious. And you pointed out the rub, though, is you've got these athletes who have worked so hard. And how do you support athletes, not just American athletes, but everybody? And how do you watch NBC? Do you give them the ratings? Do you, because I say the company, cause that's a part of the mix yeah. of watching it. And I think, one, Greg's right. I think that there's space, but I do think there's space to support the athletes. Something I think we can do that none of us will, and I wonder why, is I think we can, and particularly Utahns, might be able to talk to the Utah Olympic Committee about, we should be talking to the U.S. Olympic Committee about what will we do in the future. Because when it's happening, when Biden had to make the decision, what we know from former Olympics with Reagan, if you withdraw, it doesn't tend to do much with the politics. So what do you do at the moment? I think the split the baby and have the diplomatic boycott made sense, but we have to stop it from happening. So we need to start talking, and as a state that cares about the Olympics more than other states do, I think we need to start insisting on it. It certainly, in my mind, makes a case for dedicating two or three countries, and they rotate. I mean, it may not be as interesting, but then we can pick countries that, by and large, everyone is comfortable with. I think the International Olympic Committee is hiding behind the "we don't do politics," but
we all know that's a lie.
It's a lie, right? So you can pick countries mm-hmm. that don't have histories of egregious rights violations, and maybe it's time to pick a few and rotate them.
Yeah, and sometimes we're picking countries that would bankrupt them too. They'll go in and they just don't have the money to pull it off. And then you see the video. I'm surprised they even made it out of China, but you reference what they've been doing to make it happen. But there were some videos that came out of China where it looks like a concentration camp. They're like these little boxes that they're taking even children from their homes, not even if they have COVID, but if they've been exposed, and put them there for 3 weeks and treat them like prisoners. And they're in these boxes by themselves. They've got, you know, kind of robotic hands pushing food through to them. And people are getting so lonely and stressed and anxious mm-hmm. in there that they're like making these like little caw-caw bird noises. It's awful watching the videos because they're just going insane in these boxes by themselves. And I'm like, why is this happening?
Why are we doing this? In the name of unity. I mean, ironically, all the values that the Olympics are supposed to bring together just get wiped out when they choose these countries. And so I think the answer is right now, let's start petitioning the American Olympic U.S. committees to say, why doesn't America lead right now on who they choose next? Absolutely. And why don't we protest 4 and 5, 10 years out when we know these cities are chosen? Why don't at that point we say we won't support them?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And Senator Romney, I thought he spoke to, I think it was at the Washington Post a couple of days ago, and he said, we have the International Olympic Committee awarding games to authoritarian states that use the Olympics as a platform for propaganda, which threaten the free speech rights of our athletes. And I think that's one of the biggest problems, is that this is great propaganda for China because they're going to pull it off. They're going to put on a great game. So we're going to see that on TV. But is that really what we want? And it really is a propaganda film, much like we're hearing out of Russia right now in the Ukraine. So we're just giving them free advertising.
I'm not watching it. I'm not going to watch it. I think for all those reasons, I feel bad for the athletes, and the athletes are the ones that ultimately are victimized when you have these games and there's a dark cloud over it. It's not fair to the athletes, but then again, what else do you do?
Well,
you don't support
media,
China because you feel so bad.
Well,
for
and
them.
What we can
I
do
can't.
Is
at
what
least I can't do that.
Is what Heidi's doing. We can celebrate the local Olympians. Local broadcasts can highlight them, and we can still, particularly in Utah, where we have so many Olympians who live here, we can still shine a light on what they're doing.
But the rate, if it has great ratings, it will contribute to a bad decision that it wasn't so bad.
Right,
and that's the part that I think is. you know, we can say we hate what they did, but we're going to watch anyway. If it gets high ratings and it's a very right. and it's a success and a commercial success, then there's no lesson learned. I mean, yeah. we can just all say we really hate it, but at the end of the day, it made financial sense and everything else. Then what motivates the IOC right. to change, make sure they don't do something like that?
Because clearly money is the answer to what motivates the IOC.
Yeah, exactly. It really is the truth.
So, and ratings are revenue.
And I probably am not the best to weigh in on this, because my preference is always that people don't watch the Olympics and they watch KUTV instead. But I do know it's good family programming.
I'm on that side.
I know I felt guilty when I just called out another broadcast station.
I know, sorry. And it's not
But
their
I indicted
fault.
Them, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. We got to talk about the Utah legislative session, which is what? They've got a month left, I think, as of today. So there are 30 days left of the work and the excitement that they can provide. There's been a lot of education bills, and I'm particularly interested in why it's happening right now, because sometimes things bubble up. My gut feeling right now is that maybe the pandemic has frustrated us in how schools are working and what, say, parents do and don't have, and maybe that's where some of these bills are coming from. But we're looking at school vouchers that I think it was about 10 years ago were kind of up for debate, killed. We're also talking about parents being able to sue their school districts, all kinds of things going on that really deal with schools and how we deal with them. Mara, are these bills important? Are they really a reaction, maybe a knee-jerk reaction to the frustration we're feeling with the pandemic mess that's put on our schools?
Do you mean why does the legislature hate our teachers?
Oh, yeah.
No, I think you identified right. I think there's some pent up. And I do think we have a lot of activism from the pandemic discussions. We did have a lot of activism related to how schools are being run. And I think it brought attention to processes.
Yeah.
So I think clearly that's it. Vouchers, for me at least, came a little out of the blue. It was 14 years ago. And remember, the voters voted on it. And I think it was 62% voted against vouchers. Now, that was 14 years ago. This felt a little out of the blue. I don't think my criticism particularly of this bill is I don't think you start a discussion as big as vouchers in the middle of the session unexpectedly. So I think there's a lot of pro cons. I do think the playing field has changed from the last time we spoke of it, but I think it's hard to make a case. At its essence, vouchers do take away from public schools. And there's nuance. There's so many nuances to that.
Yeah.
But you have to accept that it decreases the budgets of public schools and is now the time and is now the right place. So I would criticize it for not being a discussion that you have for the first time when the session has started. You start this discussion long before the session starts.
Yeah, it feels like there's a lot you have to know about it. And obviously, if you're new to the discussion, it would kind of give you scholarship money where you could take it to a school of your choice. And I think Utah, instead of going that route, kind of had a lot more charter schools that have popped up. And the most recent numbers I saw was that there was about 65,000 students in the charter school system in Utah, and then another 23,000 in private schools. Should parents have that right to take money that's theirs that they pay into taxes and put it into a school where they want and maybe put them into a private school?
Absolutely, 100%. And I'll tell you that when last time this was this was passed in the legislature, the children that were in kindergarten of that year, they have graduated. So we're talking, that's how much time has
been
passed.
Been a while.
But we're in a climate now where we're in our third year of interrupted delivery of education for kids. Seventh graders today, their last normal school year was when they were in fourth grade. There is so much parental frustration on the delivery of education and how much their children are learning year over year. You have the mask issue that persists and people that how they feel about that. You've got critical race theory and some of the curriculum that parents are frustrated by. And with all those frustrations really culminating in the last couple of years, you have concerned parents that have shown up at school board meetings where if the item they'd like to talk about is not on their already printed agenda, they aren't allowed to speak about that issue, and in some cases, in some school districts, the police have removed them from the property of the school. So with all that said, where does a parent go? What can they do? If you provide backpack funding where that parent can direct the resources
backpack
and dollars.
Backpack funding is what the new name for vouchers is.
This is new to me.
Yeah.
So if you have dollars that you can direct that come with your child that the state is prepared to deliver an education for your child, and you can take those dollars and direct them to a school that you think is responsive, to your concerns and that you think will be more successful in delivering that education to your child. I find no greater way to for all schools to be accountable than to get to empower parents to that degree. And I think that if this bill passes, I think you'd see school boards and school districts inherently listen a little closer to those concerned parents because they could, they for the first time may be able to pick up and go somewhere else. So and so that's, I like it. I like it a lot.
Public schools have never been about the students that are in that time and the parents that are in that time. It's a trust that we have in America to give free and equal education to those who, kids until they're 12th grade, right? However old they are. So it isn't my taxes. There are many people who don't have children in school who pay this. It's a collective belief that investing in children and their education keeps America strong and healthy and diverse. And so that's the premise and the gift and the offering of education. And I think most parents don't pay for the true cost of their education. And so for them to assert that at that moment, at that time, their rights supersede the right of offering everyone a good education.
It's not a good education, though.
Is incorrect.
Everything you said was right, but here's
the
problem.
So you think the legislature hasn't funded... But that would be about funding.
No, it's not.
You just said that money's going to answer the problem.
No, letting them direct resources to a school that will stay open and not just announce at 10 o'clock the night before that we're going to do remote
learning. So you don't think the state should offer education? You think it should just be all portable?
I think that our public education system has so abjectly failed these children. 3 years their education's been interrupted. 3 years we have the data. It's not a theory. These kids are being socially promoted through school without the knowledge and skill set that they needed. It has failed. We used to talk about all day K. We need to have all day kindergarten because we have two parents that work or one parent families where they work. We don't have all day K through 12 anymore. You can stop a school day. You can and then just say the words remote learning as if that's actually going to appear and work efficiently when the unions and teachers have fought against remote learning, ironically, all these years prior. Remote learning is not an effective delivery of education to these kids, and they're falling behind. Something has to change. I agree, Mara, when you said we owe these children a public education, and we owe this to them, and there's a collective there that those that don't have children are also paying into it.
What happened to the Republican workforce? What happened to the Republican assertion that if we funded charter schools, that would save the problem? The Republicans are who doubled down on charter schools and said that this would solve the problem. And have charter schools failed?
We have had a lot of problems with charter schools here in Utah.
Any schools that are failing these kids in terms of getting them ready, but I'm telling you that the idea that you can just stop going to school and remote learn when you have household makeups that just do not allow for this.
But I also think COVID can't be the reason for vouchers. So I agree. And I agree we failed.
The cynicism and the frustration of the public at large. And this is why they feel like they need options.
I think you and Heidi both well identified the ingredients that have made this conversation necessary and right.
Yeah.
I just will say something as large as vouchers should not be brought up for the first time 3 weeks in. Now, you and I have been talking about vouchers forever.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's a new conversation
with a new, and let's treat it with the respect that it deserves because it's a major shift in philosophy. And it's unfair to have a shift like this. And what happens when you don't give process time, you get politics. And you get everybody lining up in their corners and shouting the mantras that can be shouted about pro and anti-voucher.
And I think there's other ways to go about it too. I think I've talked about this before, but when we left Florida and I really felt like my kids were getting a great education there. I don't know if it happens in the entire state, but the county we were in, there had been some lawsuits from decades before making sure that there was equal rights for students so there weren't Latin schools or black schools or white neighborhood schools where you literally applied like you would to college to your elementary school, your middle school, and high school. Some were art, some were science, and they all got a letter grade. And they were accountable to parents because if you didn't like it, you sent them someplace else. You didn't send your kids to the neighborhood school. You applied. And so I think that if you were to look at the talk about vouchers or charter schools or whatever and really just weigh different ideas, there might be other ways where you could get the same result where your kids could go someplace where you felt like they're getting the education you wanted without having to do the thing where you were pulling funding and I guess making that big question mark where you didn't know who would have money and when.
I don't want to treat COVID like, oh, it's just a one-off and it's such a rare experience. We shouldn't judge our public education system by it. When something like this happens, you really need your schools to do the right thing and do right by children.
The cracks.
And they failed.
Yeah, it shows
failed
the cracks.
So miserably. Yep. And so That's why you have to have these parents have to have these options. And I don't think that it's too late. I think that absent this, then what? What would you do? Because there is a narrative going on out there that says, parents, shut up. You don't know what's good for these kids. You don't know what curriculum they should be learning. You don't know anything about your kids or how they should be educated. Step aside. Let us do our job. Okay? That is a very strong sentiment that's out there. Say that to my wife. Tell my wife she doesn't know a thing about my
children. She'll mama bear you.
Yeah, there's a lot of angry,
those parents who think that they educate their kids better than the system does. We've always allowed for homeschooling. And they should take up that option.
You didn't hear what I said.
Because if they're better at educating their children than the professionals are, Greg, they should homeschool.
I want you to hear what I said. I did not say they think they can educate their children better or that they should, the way they would educate their children is how they'd like them educated. These parents can spot when their kids are not being educated. They can spot when their kids are not progressing forward. That's what they have a problem with. Not that they themselves can do it better, but they know when the system is failing their child.
But that is significantly different
than
surveilling their teachers and getting to choose curriculum. That's about better communications between them, their district, and their... That's not about them choosing what's taught, how it's taught, when it's taught.
No, but they have. Seeing that their child is progressing year over year, they have every right in the world to be concerned about that and want that to change.
And that's always been the case.
Go teachers. I really am bad at math and I'm low on patience. I would be a bad teacher.
I'd be a horrible teacher.
Okay, so I want to move on, but really quickly on this point, Mara, should teachers, Senator John Johnson from North Ogden wants parents, that is, to have the ability to sue school districts.
Sure.
Is there reason to do this and, something we should consider, going to be frivolous money
making
spent?
America more litigious is probably not what I'm ever going to vote for. And
isn't that part of who we are, though? You can sue anyone you want, whenever you want.
Yeah, for sure. But I think this bill gives up on solutions. It gives up on being sophisticated, and it gives up on the process. And I'm not ready to give up on the process.
Is this going to cost taxpayers more money if parents can sue their schools and their districts, Greg?
No, I think school districts will be more responsive if they know they're liable. If they're not,
they'll have to hire more people. I mean, of course, it'll cost more.
I think
the principal just fight the lawsuit?
I don't think it's hard to let parents speak at school board meetings about issues that concern them. I think that's not this one.
That's a second bill. This bill is specifically about suing.
Yeah.
They're
going to litigate if they can't have access to that system.
And you have found that when we litigate, we do a better job getting along.
I think that the existence or the threat of litigation makes people behave better.
You do?
It's called accountability.
When has that worked?
Always.
Always. It always works when we litigate with each other instead of mediate.
I'm saying that the prospect that there is accountability for bad behavior creates a greater motivation for good behavior.
Which is actually part of the argument I heard coming out of the legislature today. I think it was it from the House side Republicans on the death penalty? I don't want to misquote them, but I think that's who was saying that they like keeping the threat there that, maybe you won't kill someone if you think that you're an eye for an eye.
This old deterrent thing. But what we know of deterrence is it works when it's immediate. So when you steal, if we want to make it legal for machetes to cut off your arm at the moment, I do think that would be a deterrent.
I think so.
We should litigate. We should stop talking on Fridays and rather just pass ourselves legal notices.
You can keep finding logical extremes in my comments, but you know what I mean. So I'm not even going to take
all
the
right,
bait.
Greg,
I'm not taking the bait.
First dibs on this, HOAs. When people move into neighborhoods with an HOA, they sign and seal the document. They move in there knowing they have an HOA. They might like the rules because then they're not going to have a neighbor with a pink house. But now the Utah legislature wants to make some decisions so HOAs can't tell you if you have to water your lawn or not, which would be helpful for drought situations. Let you have political signs. For sale signs, I think that's helpful. I lived in a neighborhood where you couldn't put a for sale sign up or had to get permission for a moving truck. Are these things that the law should take care of, or are people making the decision when they move into an HOA and you should just live with it?
I just wish people would quit messing up good things. There's a good reason to have a homeowners association, and it does keep everything kind of on an even keel. And then you get people that get on these HOAs, and they're just becoming like... I don't know. They're like Fidel Castro's, and
in charge of anything
in the world, goodness.
And now they're like
my HOA tried to ban campaign signs when I was still a public servant, and I'm like, wait a minute, no, that's like a freedom of speech. I can, as long as it's on my yard, my property, I can do this. they reversed that decision. But I think for the right reasons, I would hope that neighbors could work all those things out, but they can be too heavy-handed. But if you take state statute to deal with HOAs, you could weaken them to the point where the value of an HOA, and there is a value to having them, it doesn't have the value anymore.
Weaken them to the point where people are planting marigolds.
Let the people in the neighborhood rise up and
maybe
vote
not marigolds,
members
but tomatoes.
Of their HOA board.
Ooh.
That
I've
are fair.
I planted tomatoes in my side yard in Florida once.
Yeah. Ooh.
Trouble.
Bad deal. Yeah, trouble. So, I don't grow vegetables.
If I leave my garbage
see
can out on garbage day and it's like 10 at night, boy, I'm busted. You yeah, see you them are come down on me. They're going to kick my door in. Yeah, it's a tough one. I live in a tough HOA.
So, you know, I'm coming from a place where I don't even value curb and gutters, so I'll just out myself there. But I'll just say that I think that for some fundamentals, particularly like lawns, so one of the things we found out during the drought is that HOAs preempted municipal land use planning in many ways. And so when people said, hey, only water every other day, we had some intense HOAs who said, no, that's not allowed.
They're
you
like, there's not mushrooms growing in that grass. It's not wet enough.
So there is a middle place where maybe they direct that it can be five kinds of landscape, or maybe they direct when and how the political signs go up and what part. I do think.
But can I have a pride flag?
Well, for me, yes, because I believe that America is about individuality, which you will not see me moving into an HOA because of this. But I do think there are some fundamental things that the HOA can't supersede, sort of land use planning on behalf of the cities, and maybe some freedom expression issues. And I think they could choose, the HOA could maybe choose how they want those
yeah
acts of individualism to be displayed. But I do think we're running into more routine problems with severe HOA regulations butting up against
policies. I will say it's pretty easy for me to defend that an HOA cannot trump local ordinances or
they are
or yeah. So yeah. I think that's gone. That's a
bridge.
And if you
far,
lost
yes
your fifth grade election, just say, you know, let bygones be bygones. Be a nice neighbor, maybe help and serve on the HOA, but don't take over like your
plan the local Freedom Festival yes instead.
Don't yeah be psycho.
They are notoriously heavy-handed, these HOAs. It's true.
I have so many issues I want to talk to you in so little time. Limiting media access, I want to bring this up because
I love
think
that part.
But it's
whatever
so important for
whatever
the media
that topic
to talk about
I didn't
this
see this subject, but I love that.
This is sponsored by Senator Mike McKell, a Republican out of Spanish Fork. You might know him. He, I think, has said that, you know, maybe there's some misunderstandings, but he wants to make it clear that a credentialed journalist cannot enter the Senate floor unless they receive permission from a Senate media official and follow, quote, applicable dress requirements on the floor and other non-public areas of the Senate, such as the chamber, the halls, the lounge. Journalists would also be limited to entering for the purpose of conducting a specific interview. Now, as someone who knows it's not easy to get an interview, if you don't have access to the floor and you don't have access in between votes to walk in there and be like, hey, what's going up? And you don't have a specific appointment, it really fetters access in my mind. Greg, is this, I mean, you've obviously worked in the legislature trying to keep control of things. You obviously don't want like a wild circus on the floor of the House there. But is this going to shut off the ability for the media to ask pertinent questions to lawmakers who could otherwise hide in hallways and staircases and back rooms where they don't have to talk?
Yeah, I think there's a happy medium here. You can, there's hallways adjacent to the chambers in the House and Senate. There is a process to be credentialed to be the media there's some process to determine that it's just not someone that just wants to anoint themselves a member of the media. So they look into it and make sure that the credentials, because you are going to get access that the public just doesn't automatically have. That's all good. I think that the dress requirement on how you're supposed to be on the floor, I actually like that part as well. I just think that it ought not interrupt the flow or some of the processes of what they're doing on the House and Senate floor. But if they're not allowed on the floor and they have the credentials and they're in the interior hallways, which are not public, by the way, standing in those interior hallways waiting for an interview would probably be the better place to be able to ask those questions than on the floor of the Senate or the House. So I think that if the media has access to those areas that are not public we've done our job, and we've made sure there's good availability and accessibility.
I'm a little suspicious of this being a solution looking for a problem. We are not known for having a particularly aggressive press where it is just like, whoa, wow, those guys are intense. Now, the dress code, I don't really get, but fine. But I really want to do some investigative journalism and figure out who they're talking about. What guy wore shorts and
flip-flops? Especially now that Rod Decker's not there, because he used to do his live shot while we were on the floor from the gallery.
I know.
Yeah,
and it was like Rod was standing right next to me on the dais. Rod, I can hear, I'm just watching him in the gallery. I can hear every word. There's like...
So that's a good point.
His low voice, though.
That's a good point. Like, if it's distracting, I get it, but I'm not quite sure I'm aware that this is solving a problem. And so, therefore, I get a little suspicious that it's just protectionist. And I would always default on the side of media access. I'm just pro media access.
I am too. I don't know why there is no problem.
So then I'm like, what happened?
Must have been a problem.
The problem was somebody overheard somebody saying something they shouldn't have said. So the thing should be that they shouldn't have said it. But like, why? What access? Sunlight, daylight is always good.
I always love that too. And you should just be careful of what you say then. But I did see a couple stories come out of the legislative session where conversations were overheard. So if you're in public, act like you're a news anchor. If your mic is on, it's always hot. Even if you're in between shows or whatever, you just got to be careful of what you say. So
I've been a victim of that.
Of being overheard?
Yeah.
Or speaking
into the mic.
Speaking in the heat of the moment to a reporter and saying something that I really wish I could have not said.
So you're like that's President why they Biden miss you. That calls people...
I said, I might have been a swear bear. It was heard. So, but anyway.
You should learn to talk quieter. I'm a loud talker myself. I have no secrets.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like there's so much to talk about in so little time. So next week we're going to have to talk more about if we get anywhere with the food sales tax. I know that a lot of people at home are very much behind this, but a lot of people who actually work inside of the Capitol, they're not so much.
Can we just do one quick one that you have at the end, and it's mental health for first responders?
We do have to give a round of applause for this.
I'll just say one caveat to this. What we have found is that if you're going to give mental health to first responders, you also need to make sure that whatever department that is, they have access to their officers in which their up channel, their boss doesn't know.
Yes,
because
be out of
the
their
peer
chain of
pressure is why first responders are not accessing mental health and just the culture. And it's not it's not a bad culture. It's just you're the strong one, right? And so to ask for some help is hard
when they want to be sissies and they want to cry to somebody
because
like
of people like Greg,
their mother,
who have
because they can't grit it out.
Stop right now.
If you have a real problem, though,
I was being the very person you were talking
about.
But
I will say, when it comes, lots of departments in Utah have done this correctly. So I'm not pointing fingers, but just I would love a little addition to the bill that says you need a peer support group, and that's usually what they're called in departments. And you can, as an officer, you can access that, and they never report it to your sergeant or your lieutenant or your chief or whoever. And I think it's really important that you can go get the mental health support you need without feeling like anyone knows about it, because that's a huge barrier to accessing mental health.
Yeah, especially if you're a police officer, and let's say you've got your gun and your badge, and if you go admit that you might have some mental health problems,
that you're stressed.
They stick behind your desk, they take your gun away, and then it only makes matters worse because you're not doing your job. You know you can't be doing what you want.
So let's just make sure they can do this with privacy, and then I think the money will be well spent.
I am all about medical privacy. All about it.
Amen.
And freedom. Medical freedom and
freedom.
Medical privacy.
Your body, your choice.
Yes, and there are a couple bills that are going through the legislative session. There's another one I'm watching for that will hopefully change that for doctors as well, where they can go get help and not have to actually tell their own doctor group or their hospitals.
You put a face to that.
So that's coming up. I'm watching that one closely. So we will talk more about that in the days and weeks to come. I'm glad that you've been with us and listening. Tell your friends about us. Come hang out with us. And be careful with your rock stars, because you never know what they're going to do
to
your health.
You know what I hate?
Please tell me.
Catheters and kidney stones. Those are the two things I hate the most in life.
Wow.
Yep.
I have a couple other things on my list. I'll list them next week.
It became crystal clear. That's what I hate.
Catheters and kidney stones, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.